We turn now to the EU's proposed nature restoration law, which is due before the European Parliament next week. It's part of a plan to restore Europe's natural habitats, 80% of which are in poor health. Reflected here, 85% of habitats in Ireland are either inadequate or bad. But it's faced massive opposition by some. The European People's Party walked out of negotiations on the proposed law, and it was rejected by the EU Agricultural Committee 2 weeks ago.
I do want to make it very clear that it is a proposal at this stage. I think we all understand the need to protect nature, to restore biodiversity loss, to allow nature to regrow. But there are aspects of it that go too far and go very far, in my view.
I often think that Twitter has a lot to answer for, because a lot of the debate has been very divisive, perhaps unnecessarily so, because while many of us will comment on this proposal, the ones who will deliver are those perhaps not listening to this programme because they're out farming, and we need to encourage and support them.
This proposal is half-baked, half-cooked, and we're going to drive farmers off the land, and I believe it's a deliberate policy. I don't know what's driving it. It's a green folly, green agenda, yes, but the flood lands that people give all their life draining, and we see now they're going to be hunted off this land to head up to Connacht. So this is not acceptable.
I never believe in walking off the pitch. So an awful lot of it is very vague, and all we're asking for is clarity, and then I think everybody can sit around the table and agree.
All right.
Because how can anybody be against nature restoration? And you'd imagine that you'd nearly get unanimity on it if it was explained and done properly.
I really think the EPP are acting in bad faith walking away from the table. Our job as legislators is to find the amendments, the compromises that will make this work.
Their intention, it appears here, is to sabotage nature protection laws. And this is really an extraordinary position.
You heard there Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, Commissioner Mairead McGuinness of Fine Gael, Independent TD Matty McGrath, Fine Gael MEP Sean Kelly, Green Party MEP Grace O'Sullivan and campaigning journalist John Gibbons. It's also worth mentioning that yesterday Sinn Féin's MEP Chris McManus announced his support for the new law. Well, most of the coverage to date has focused on re-wetting, but that is just one part of the proposals. So what is the Nature Restoration Law? Well, I'm delighted to say that joining me this morning is the Irish Independent's Environment Editor, Caroline O'Doherty. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning.
This proposed law was born out of the EU's Biodiversity Strategy for 2030, which was published way back in May 2020. And as part of that, a commitment was put forward for legally binding targets to restore nature. We know scientists across Europe are calling for it. Certainly the environmental lobby is calling for it. But it's not just them, is it? It's also economists.
That's right. From perhaps an unexpected source during the week, the European Central Bank was discussing the importance of restoring biodiversity and healthy nature and healthy ecosystems. And as one of the senior board members put it, you know, this isn't about flower power and tree hugging. This is actually about financial stability and ultimately having sound banks. So he's made an extraordinary leap there, and yet that's how they see it. If you don't have a functioning nature system, so what do we mean by that? We mean a system that can provide us with clean water. We spend huge amounts on cleaning the water that we do have, and it's getting more complicated. If we don't have a nature system that can give us fertile soils, that can guarantee food production, if we don't have the pollinators, the bees and the other insects that can provide our plants, how do we actually have a food system? And ultimately, if we don't have nature that can support us, we don't have nature that can support the economy. So,
we know the targets are there, but the key thing, I suppose, here is it's set down in law. It is legally binding.
Yes. Now, the thing is, things have been legally binding in the past, and this is an effort to strengthen all of that. We've had for 30 years the Habitats Directive, and it established this principle that you would protect the extra special parcels of nature. So the really supreme, you know, the cream of the nature settings, everything from our dune systems, our freshwater systems, grasslands, the more mountain grasslands like heath and so on. And you would pick the best that you have in your country and put in place conservation plans for those and protect those. Now, that has failed to a large degree. Not in every country. Ireland, we're particularly bad at it. We identified over 400 of these places, these stretches of land and ecosystems, and we haven't put legal protections in place for many of them, and we haven't put conservation plans in for many of them, and we haven't implemented the conservation actions that we were supposed to.
In fact, Let's just have a quick look at the six main parts of it, because we brought you on to take us through the facts of what the law actually says. And it's broadly divided into rivers, marine, urban spaces, pollinators, forests and agriculture. Can we just rattle through it, if you like? Talk to me about what they say about urban spaces.
Well, that's interesting because people don't maybe connect nature with urban settings, but they're saying that there should be no net loss of green space or trees by 2030. That's tricky because we're doing a lot of building at the moment, and that after you've decided that you've preserved what exists, there should be a gradual increase in green space and tree cover by 2040 and further targets by 2050, and that there should be at least 10% tree cover in urban settings. That's suburbs, that's cities, that's towns by 2050.
So we will see then through this a lot more trees in our urban and suburban areas.
That's the target, that's the aim, that's what they want us to do.
And pollinators is the next one. So we know in Ireland a third of all wild bee species will be extinct in the next 7 years. The trajectory is that. What are they saying about pollinators?
Yes, well, they want certainly to preserve the numbers that we have and reverse the decline in numbers, both in the disappearance of individual species and in the decline in numbers of those species that are a little healthier. Reverse the decline by 2030 and then again gradually increase it so that we have a really healthy population by 2050.
And then moving on to rivers, we know in Ireland it is a worry for people living near rivers, the issue, the critical issue of flooding as well. So the key thing here across Europe is this idea of removing barriers, restoring rivers and restoring floodplains. Is that correct?
That's right. They're concerned with the water quality in the rivers, but they're also really concerned about how rivers are functioning in terms of we've kind of distorted them. We've moved them to suit us. We've culverted them. We've put weirs on them. We've put all sorts of barriers, and we've prevented them flowing the way they want to flow, and we've prevented them using their natural floodplains. So they want across Europe about 25,000 kilometres of free-flowing rivers. That's to allow water to flow in a more natural way, but also to allow fish and marine life to function in a more natural way. Obviously, huge difficulties there because we've built along rivers and we have farmland along rivers and we have farmyards along rivers. So it's going to be a tricky one as well. We have a lot of flood protection plans and they're not nature protection plans. They're not allowing the place to flood. We're trying to actually build up against flood. So there's a lot of work to be done there and how you tease that out and make that a practical option.
And you mentioned there marine ecosystems as well. There is a section on that. I mean, I suppose this is where the conflicts start to arise, because I know that the EU has also increased its binding target for renewable energy, which was launched last June, to reach something like 42.5% of supply by 2030. That's a doubling of the existing share. A lot of that will come from offshore wind generation. So you have this potential where you have, on the one hand, trying to build offshore wind, but then on the other hand, having marine ecosystems being restored.
And that's of particular significance for us because we're really relying on our offshore wind energy to get our climate action targets up and to get our renewable energy targets up. And we haven't yet designated. We've committed to designating 30% of our marine areas as protected areas. We've about 10% so far. We have marine protected area legislation going through the Oireachtas, due to enter the Oireachtas maybe before summer. And we haven't worked out how we're going to marry that. You know, a seeming conflict between protecting the marine environment and then putting offshore wind into it, and that is an issue. There's been a lot of talk from government in the last while that the two are not mutually exclusive, that you can have marine protected areas and have renewable energy. There's a lot of probably the marine area is the area where we've done least research on what do we have, what kind of life do we have. Having there, excuse me, you know, commercial fish stocks, there's monitoring of those, but we're not quite sure what else is in there. So there's a lot of work to be done on that. It's going to be a tricky one as well.
And the last two then, forests and agriculture. Forests, pretty important because obviously in Ireland we have a lot of commercial forestry. What does it say? What are the goals in the Nature Restoration Law for forestry?
They're going to be very specific to each individual country, but the broad sweep is that you have commercial forestry, they accept that, but the kind of commercial forestry that we have means that all the trees are planted at the same time, they all grow at the same rate, they're all cut down at the same time. You have very exposed land there, soil that washes away. It's a very unhealthy kind of a landscape. And they want to try and marry that with some sort of continuous cover forestry, whereby you plant at different times, you plant different species, you can still cut away for commercial purposes, but the general forest still survives. And also just more forest for forest's sake, not for commercial. That's a particularly difficult one because we're set up for commercial forestry. And certainly there are other countries in Europe, the Scandinavian countries, have huge commercial forestries. They're very concerned about this one. How does that work with, you know, a core part of their economy? And a core part of the I suppose the social and cultural situation in their countries, but they also want to stop us clearing deadwood in forests is the old leaves and the branches and so on that build up. They store carbon. They provide cover for insects and livestock. They put nutrients back into the soil. So those kind of things, they really need us to change the kind of way we do forestry. We actually do have a new forestry strategy that incorporates some of these ideas, but it's with Europe at the minute. They have to approve it. We were expecting approval sort of imminently. So we have to see what they say about that and whether that you know, matches these kind of ambitions.
And then critically, agriculture, we have heard a lot about rewetting, but there are other things in there, such as the grassland butterfly index, which has an impact, obviously, on farmers and farming, and restoration for farmland bird species as well. The targets in there are quite clear.
They are, and they do reflect some of the smaller schemes that we do have. And we have the acre scheme. We've had various eco schemes, you know, for quite a while in Ireland, for preserving and restoring small parts of farms. This is kind of, you know, ramping that up, and that's, I suppose, where the contentions have come in, because, you know, whereas a lot of farmers are very happy to, you know, give over some of their farms to nature, the idea of having to maybe give much larger amounts, that's where it's become quite tricky. And it's the indicators by how you measure that, the likes of the butterflies and the likes of the birds, the indicators of how you measure, you know, has nature been given space on this farmland? Is it working healthily? Is it surviving healthily, you know, in and around farmland? That's contentious too.
And obviously, if this is passed, and that appears to be in the balance, just briefly, Caroline, what then happens?
The next vote is from the very influential Environment Committee of the European Parliament, and that's next week. If they pass that, it then has to go to a full vote of the Parliament. And if it passes that, it still has to then go through more negotiations within the Council of Ministers and back to the Commission. And has everybody agreed? Or are there still some sticking points? And then there's a lot of work to be done then on how you actually do the practicalities of this. You know, we know that once it would be passed, there would have to be nature restoration plans drawn up by every country.
And budgets,
And budgets, and then has to be an implementation process. You know, the exact amount of information that you have to provide to the European Commission every few years, it will be at least every 3 years, how you actually show that you're doing what you said you'd do and what the law requires you to do. But there is a big hurdle to get over first. That is the Environment Committee, and any sort of objective analysis of who's voting and what way puts that voted very, very tight. But there is another meeting coming up of the Council of Environment Ministers after that, and it is expected that they will not be the ones that want to say this is no good. So, you know, that they will try to salvage it and maybe try and find some compromises that might get it back, okay, you know, into a more wide acceptance.
We'll keep a close eye on it. And the law itself, if anyone is interested, it's 80 pages. It's online. You can read it. Freely available. We'll keep a close eye on that as it happens next week. But for now, Caroline Doherty, thank you very much indeed for joining us.